in philosophy, in science, in sociology, in several disciplines of thought, there is a convenient division between two different ways of thinking about problems. There are what are called lumpers and splitters. Splitters are people who see lots and lots and lots of different problems, and lumpers are people who believe that all those different problems are really one problem. They lump them all together. And that all the differences between them are either superficial or illusory. They're not very important, or in fact, they're not there at all. This morning I want to talk about three different things that are discussed in the Torah portion and suggest that they're really all about the same thing, even though at first glance they have nothing to do with one another. The first is the way the Torah portion begins, which is taking the census of the children of Israel and giving machatzit ha-shekel, a half shekel, which is what everybody was supposed to give, and then at the end all the half shekels would be counted and they would have an accurate census. The second, of course, is the golden calf, when Moses goes up the mountain and the Israelites give all of their jewelry and valuables to be melted down to build a huge idol, which they plan to worship. And then the third is the emphasis in our parsha on Shabbat. On the Sabbath day, and the centrality of observing the Sabbath day, all of those, the census, the Sabbath, the golden calf, although at first glance about very different things, I think are really about the same. Let's start with a half shekel. Why a half shekel? Why not a shekel? Which wasn't, after all, such an expensive tribute in ancient Israel. And the rabbis assume that the reason that you have a half shekel is the same reason that the Sanhedrin, the ancient Jewish court, used to sit in a half circle, in a semicircle. They apply to that the verse from Psalms, Elohim nitzav ba'adat el. God sits in the assembly of God. And they said, well, obviously God sits in the assembly of God. That can't be what the verse is teaching. What the verse must be teaching us is the assembly of God is the Sanhedrin, the court of rabbis. And when it says God sits there, it's because the Sanhedrin sits in a half circle and God completes the circle. You give a half shekel because no one is complete alone, without God, without other human beings. Now, this was a commonplace for society up to our time, but not anymore. In fact, I can diagnose what is wrong with America, and I would say Los Angeles in particular, in two words. All you really need to know what is wrong with our society. The words are carpool lane. Have you ever been in the carpool lane? Probably not. But if by chance you've actually ever been in the carpool lane, then you realize that there's one out of six lanes that is devoted to cars that have more than one person in them, which, by the way, when I grew up, two people wasn't a carpool, but that's a carpool was five people, six people, two people was two people in a car. But the remarkable thing is the carpool lane is always empty. Everyone drives alone. The sociologist Robert Putnam from Harvard a few years ago wrote a book called Bowling Alone about the decline of bowling leagues in America. Because he said associations and leagues and clubs and groups are starting to disappear. And everybody thinks that they are individuals suspended by themselves. They drive alone. You can sit in your house and order food and eat alone in front of the TV. This all began, by the way, with the ATM, the automatic teller machine, because then you didn't actually have to encounter a human being even to go to the bank. And this notion that you could exist by yourself and be self-sufficient is an illusion. All you're doing is hiding all of the people who make it possible for you to eat and to drive and to live. We're all mutually interdependent, we just don't like to acknowledge it. And so the first lesson of the Machatzit HaShekel and of the Parsha is this tissue of reliance, of community that all of us live in, even when we think we don't. Then there's the golden calf. The golden calf is, first of all, and primarily, about worshiping the visible. It's about the inability of human beings to understand that that which you cannot see is greater than that which you can see. As Emerson so beautifully put it, I believe in magnetism, not in needles. In other words, in the force that draws things together, not in the particular examples of that force. I believe in human goodness, not in the money that enables people to do good. Because that's what the golden calf was. It was an attempt to worship through money. And that's why it was, after all, the golden calf. It's why, by the way, you may notice, if it ever strikes you, that there's never gold on a Torah. When the ark opens, do you notice how all the metal is silver and never gold? In fact, if you put gold lettering in a Torah, it's pasul, it's invalid. Because the idea here is that every human being is part of a community and that that which ties us to one another, in essence, is intangible, can't be seen. Love, justice, goodness. Obligation. A sense of empathy, a shared realization of tragedy. This week, as I was thinking about this sermon and the way the parsha tied together, I was driving in my car and listening to the radio, and they were telling the story of a doctor who took his 4 weeks of vacation to go to ravaged villages. Villages that were nearly wiped out by the tsunami. And he used his own money to buy medical supplies. And he found someone on the plane on the way there, and the guy asked him, "What are you doing?" And when he told him, the guy joined up, and the two of them spent a month together treating victims. And when they said to him, "What inspired you to do this?" he said, "It's because he heard a story of a victim who, like many of the victims, was mute, unable to speak, except this one wasn't entirely mute. He could speak, but all he could speak was the names of the three daughters he had lost, and repeated them over and over and over again, and said nothing else. And he said, 'I have children, I understood that man.' He was connected, and not by anything tangible. He believed in magnetism. in the force that draws human beings one to the other because they're not separate. And this is very easy to lose, this sense of community and this sense of transcendence in the world in which we live. And that brings us to Shabbat. Shabbat is a day in which we stand apart from our own lives so that we can immerse ourselves in life, so that we can appreciate the way it is that the world is intended to be. This is, by the way, the guiding principle of Shabbat. Shabbat is the day on which we do not change the world, so that we can figure out the other 6 days of the week, when we're busy changing the world, are we changing it in ways that make it better or make it worse? Are we connecting or dividing? Are we worshiping what we can see, or what is greater than the tangible? Are we evaluating ourselves by what we have or by who we are? All of those connect in this parsha because one thing stands behind them. What stands behind the idea of the machatzit shekel, the half shekel that you give to the census, the sin of the golden calf, and the commandment of Shabbat, all of them are about disorders, diseases of the human ego. That's what it is. Why do you think you can survive alone? Because there's something wrong with your ego. How is it that you value the product of your own hands, the coins in your pocket, the homes that you build, instead of the love, the connection, the worship, the goodness you create? Because those things represent your ego. And why is it impossible to stop for a day, to have a Shabbat, to cease what the poet called getting and spending? Because if you do, you have to confront yourself. They all tie together. Because, after all, any religious training is training in the shaping of the soul, which is also training in the shaping of the self and of the ego. So what's the resolution of this? I mean, Shabbat alone is a palliative but not a cure. Shabbat helps us understand where it is we are intended to stand, but still the world is so powerful and so overwhelming. I don't have an answer, but I have a story. And a story is as good as an answer. Part of it is the realization that there is absolutely nothing that I, in the lessons that I have just said, that everybody here didn't already know. The examples may be new to you, but you could have written the sermon yourself. You didn't know we shouldn't worship what we create with our hands, of course. We all know that. We all know that as much as we feel like individuals, in fact, we rely on one another to survive. We all know that. You're not going to walk out of here and say, oh my, you know what the rabbi said? Never thought about that. We actually need other people. The problem, of course, is that insights flash for a moment and disappear. We know that they're true, and then we drive away. We grasp them in the morning, and by evening they have flown. And why that is the case, that's what I can illustrate with a story. Those of you who were here for the Torah reading, if you paid very close attention, I mentioned the Slonim Rebbe, and I said you would hear more about him later. And I know that you have been waiting with bated breath, thinking, when's the Slonim Rebbe going to reappear? Now. He was once teaching his students, and he told them the following parable. He said, two peasants were walking along a dark road, and they didn't know which way to go, because it was so dark they actually couldn't tell which road to take that would bring them back to their village. And they were just standing there, in the darkness, helpless, when all of a sudden, a brightly lit carriage came careening down the road at great speed. And it was beautiful and fancy and full of light, a dazzling sight. And it drove by them very quickly. And one peasant said, oh my God, did you see that carriage, how it was lit up? And the second one said, no, I actually wasn't paying any attention to the carriage. I was looking to see how the light of the carriage lit the road ahead. That's what happens when we hear something that makes sense. There are two ways to react to it. One is to say, you know, that's really true. The other is to say, knowing that that's true, how does it light the road ahead for my life? Knowing that that's true, what would I change? What would be different? How would I grow? In the analogy of the story, what road does it show me to find my way home? We need one another. The forces that matter in this world are the forces that are ephemeral and slip through our fingers, but are more powerful than the things we can see. And it is central to our tradition and to our lives to stop periodically, to turn off the radio, to turn off the TV, to close the book, to stop the many voices that assail us, persuade us, jangle. Thank you, that was exactly. I have a button under the bima, actually. I hit that button and the cell phone goes off in the back. But that's exactly the point. There is not a place where we feel the right to be out of touch so that we can be in touch. That's Shabbat. It's here to illuminate the road and to grow the soul so that we can tie ourselves one to another. And just like the circle of the Sanhedrin, the ancient court, feel ourselves complete with our community and with God. Shabbat Shalom.